Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Is this the nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Is this the nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Is this the nightcap?
No! This is Patrick!
Time now for the Nightcap on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to the Nightcap. Jody Biasi and Derek Kramer. One more hour to go. Talked a lot in the first hour about the Sabres and kind of the style of going about rebuilding your team or building your team. And, you know, they are where they're at. They were the worst team in hockey last season. They've got a ton of holes. Winger, defense, depth at both of them. Goalie, depth at goalie. Basically, center is the only thing they got figured out. It's pretty much it. So, there's some big names in the rumors today. Artemi Panarin reportedly will not sign a contract extension right now. Trending towards a situation where Columbus could be looking to trade him and may already be listening to offers on him. And there's Phil Kessel stuff out there. Kessel was in trade rumors a couple weeks ago. Now, report from The Athletic comes out that he would be fine with a trade out of Pittsburgh. I wouldn't expect the Sabres to really be in on either of these guys, but it's worth talking about. There's really nothing happening in the next 4 days unless O'Reilly gets traded. 3 days. Obviously, Darlene gets drafted on Friday. I don't really think it's a great idea. If I had to choose between these two guys, Panarin's a better player. Panarin's the guy I'd rather have. He's younger. I think he's better. I think he's more all-around. He's a playmaker as well as a sniper. Kessel's 30, little older. But if I'm the Buffalo Sabres and I'm gonna try to get a big fish, and I don't think I can get John Tavares, so I'm gonna see what's out. I'm gonna see if I can get one of these two guys. I would prefer Kessel because he's under contract. It's not as bad as you might think because he has that big deal, but Toronto is retaining $1.2 million a year of it. So his cap hit is $6.8 million. I don't know if Pittsburgh would even be able to retain any more. That would be nice. He's 30 years old, so he would have to agree to come here anyway. It's a modified no-trade clause, so he would submit an 8-team trade list that he would be willing to go to. Maybe he'd waive it to go to Buffalo, maybe not. I mean, he'd be willing to waive it to go to Arizona. I know his former assistant coach is there, but I mean, come on, if you're going to go to Arizona, you go to Buffalo. He's got term. I'm safe in knowing I've got Phil Kessel for 4 more years, if I were to acquire him right now. And his value is not as high, so you're probably not trading nearly as much. You're going to trade something significant, for sure. But Panarin, you might have to break the bank for. That's a guy Columbus went out last offseason and traded for him to be their franchise player up front. You'd have to give up a whole hell of a lot to get him. So from a value perspective, I'd rather have Kessel. From a style perspective, Kessel fits too. Because he's fast on the wings. He's fast on the wing. He's not a physical freak by any means. But if he's been able to do what he does already being maybe a little out of shape, then he can't do it in his early 30s. It's not like, I don't know. A lot of what makes him great is his shot, his release, the kinds of things that I feel like a player can still be successful with even when they lose a little bit of speed. And he's fast enough, and he's shown that he really hasn't declined over the past couple years. I mean, declined. He had his career year last season with 92 points. His best season of his career was last season. So he's certainly not on the way down yet. I think I could acquire him. I could get 3 of those 4 years in his contract to be really good. And that's the type of player where you were to put him on a wing with Jack Eichel or even Casey Mittelstadt. And I think that's the perfect kind of winger. A guy that can just bury the puck in the back of the net, which they have not had. They've had playmakers around Eichel, like Reinhart and O'Reilly and even Opozo to an extent, the guys on the power play. But this is a different kind of winger that he necessarily hasn't had. Kane was a guy that you might describe as a sniper, but I think he was more by volume.
He also was a guy who played with a little more sandpaper to his game. He was a little more physical than a guy like Kessel would be, or even Panarin, if we wanted to talk about him as well. Kane was a little more of the tougher to play against, but like you said, by volume kind of shooter.
Right. Kessel's more, you give him the puck, he might score right now. Kane is, I'm going to fire the puck at the net 13 times tonight. I might score one. It's the difference.
I mean, to be fair, to his credit, good things do happen when you throw the puck on the net, but there are some times where there was a bit of a lack of a hockey IQ, you know, where to put the puck if you're shooting it, you know, try to put it low so that you can get a rebound from a teammate, you know, something like that. Phil Kessel's been doing this for most of his career, beating goaltenders with, you know, better plays, I would honestly say. Nothing against Evander Kane.
So let's say Jason Botterill wanted to land a big fish. Panarin or Kessel? Knowing that Panarin has one more year in his deal, and that
is where I make it.
Let's say you'd have to, you just trade for him. There's no locked in contract extension. I'm not saying he wouldn't sign here, but you don't know if he's going to be here long term when you acquire Artemi Panarin. To me, Kessel looks like a better idea.
Exactly. I think that's where I would go siding on the Phil Kessel thing, is because of the fact that you do have him for a little bit longer, and it would really be for, you know, it would help you, I think, longer term, knowing that you have the guy for more than one season. It is a modified no-trade clause, no-movement clause, so if things go south with Kessel real fast, unfortunately, well, welcome back to cap hell. But I think, though, in the end, the other thing is I like Phil Kessel. I think Phil Kessel is awesome. And it would just be great if he thrived with the Buffalo Sabres in front of the Toronto Maple Leafs so that they could rub their Phil Kessel loves hot dog stories right in their face.
Right. So, if anyone's wondering, by the way, why Kessel might be available, it's not because Pittsburgh doesn't want him. It is more,
there's cap restraints, right?
Well, there was rumblings from last season that him and head coach Mike Sullivan were having issues, and it was based in Kessel not playing with either Crosby or Malkin for pretty much the entire season and the playoffs. I mean, if you're Kessel, imagine when he got traded to Pittsburgh from Toronto. If I were him, I'd be thinking, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. I don't have to play with Tyler Bozak anymore. Let's go. I get to go play with Crosby and Malkin. My stats are going to go up. My reputation's going to go up. I'm no longer relied on to be the star player on my line. Less pressure. I can just thrive in that role. And he kind of didn't really end up doing that last season. He played a lot with, well, it was Derek Brassard later in the year. I'm trying to recall who their third line center was before. Riley Sheahan. So he's playing on that third line. He's getting number one power play unit minutes. But, I mean, you go to Pittsburgh, and if I'm Phil Kessel, I'm like, why am I not playing with Evgeny Malkin or Sidney Crosby? And more so, it was Malkin. And that's why he was kind of got into it with his head coach a little bit. Why aren't you playing me with the star center?
And yet, to think about that, to have the year that he did point production-wise,
92 points, right?
Makes it even sound even more attractive to get a guy like Phil Kessel.
So I wonder, actually, you could sell him on, I could sell him on, all right, Phil, you're mad you didn't get to play with Malkin last season because you had to play with Derek Brassard and Riley Sheahan. If you come here, you're playing with Jack Eichel or Casey Mittelstadt. Like, you're going to play with a really talented centerman. So maybe he would even waive it. Who knows? If it looks like if that's the reason he wants out of Pittsburgh, doesn't want out of Pittsburgh, but they would be okay with a trade out of Pittsburgh. It looks like that's the reason, because he wants to play with an elite center. You can offer that. So, and that's different than Panarin. Because if I got to convince one of these guys long-term on how they're going to stay here, Panarin, I mean, it sounds to me like he just wants to test free agency. That's what it looks like. Maybe he just doesn't want to play with John Tortorella, like you mentioned in the first hour. Maybe he wants to play with a better center, too. I mean,
about that Tortorella thing, he and his agent actually have made public comments saying that it's not about the coach.
That doesn't mean that.
I know, but
they're telling the truth.
I know that doesn't mean that, but usually, you know, that from what you
it's pretty
said,
forthcoming.
Though, it's forthcoming, and it plays more into the he probably just wants to test free agency.
We've got just opening up some Friedman quotes. You know, Elliot Friedman, Bob McKenzie, they do their radio rounds in Canada, and generally there's some juicy stuff that comes out of it. And recently, there's been a lot of juicy stuff on Ryan O'Reilly. Just reading through these real quick. Not much. He's talking about, Friedman does talk about Ryan O'Reilly. I saw Ryan O'Reilly here. He just looked at me and he started laughing. I said, good luck. And he said, thanks very much. This was in Chicago? Interesting. So, nothing new on O'Reilly. No new trade rumors. No new trade teams that could be linked. Still sitting here with Vancouver, Montreal, and Carolina.
And to which, by the way, Montreal, thank you for crushing my hopes and dreams of getting my second-line center immediately back in Alex Galchenyuk.
Jonathan Drouin's still there.
Yay. I mean,
he's not good.
He's good, but he's not a center. I would have
that to Montreal because they think he is a center.
I would have loved having my 2C coming back in this trade in addition to something else. So thank you, Marc Bergevin. And then, by the way, Pierre Dorion immediately took the heat off of you, by the way.
Yeah, what is going on? Why can't anyone in Canada hire a competent general manager?
Well, Montreal, I can suspect it's one thing. It's because they need a guy who could be able to speak French to the French reporters and they can all French and everything else.
Bergevin, Dorion, maybe I don't want to put Dorion in this group because especially if those reports are true that
merci beaucoup
that his owner was telling him you do not trade this guy in the division. So the trade that was the better trade with Florida, maybe he was never allowed to make. But let's throw him in there for now. Bergevin, Shirelli, Jim Benning. It's just like there's bad GMs in Canada. Trade O'Reilly to Canada somewhere. Except Winnipeg. Shovel Day Off.
Yeah, Shovel Day Off seems to know what he's doing at this point. And are we forgetting one? We are. Toronto. Dubas.
Looks pretty good. So. Kyle Dubas just won the Calder Cup. General manager. I want that young wizardry type of general manager. It's what teams should be looking towards.
So yeah, but like you said, five of the seven Canadian GMs seem to be tripping over themselves. More times than not. Even though Benning has done better lately for Vancouver, I'm sorry, but sometimes you go back to your old stripes of, you know, silly moves.
Let's talk about these Mike Hoffman trades for a minute. First, actually, 11daypowerplay.com. Search, go to donate, search WGR 550, go to my page, Joe DiBiase.
You could also go to my page for Derek Kramer. This isn't a contest, though. We're all fighting to beat cancer.
It is for me.
No. We're all fighting cancer, Joe. That's what the fight is. That's what the competition's against. Always remember that.
On Mike Hoffman. So he got traded twice today. And I think that we've covered the ground of, okay, Ottawa's an embarrassment. They traded Doug Wilson, the general manager of the Sharks, middlemaned them. Acquired Hoffman, and they got more for him. I've tried to do that in fantasy football. I know the process. And what's funny is he apparently was in contact with Florida's GM last night about Hoffman before he even acquired him. So imagine getting that call if you're Florida and it's the San Jose GM and he says, all right, what would you give us for Mike Hoffman? Wait, what? What? Did you trade for Mike Hoffman? No, not yet. And then the conversation would just be, okay, well, I'm going to go acquire Mike Hoffman. Nope, you can't do it. Ottawa won't trade you because you're in our division somehow, even though you're Florida and they're Ottawa. You're in the same division. It's kind of interesting how that ends up going down. But anyway, the interesting part, another interesting part of this is Mike Hoffman seemingly had no value for a guy that has scored 20 goals four seasons in a row, that is only 28 years old, that isn't on that bad a contract. 27, 29, 26, 22 are his goal totals the last 4 years. I mean, come on, the guy should have value. And he goes for basically nothing from Ottawa to San Jose. Like, Ottawa gets a player back that they probably just wanted to help get to the cap floor and an all right prospect. And then they gave up a fifth and got a sixth back. So they downgraded in terms of picks. So that's Ottawa's end of it. And San Jose, like, sure, they middlemanned him and they got good value in terms of what they had just traded for him. But even then, they still only get a second-round pick next season? Where's the... I know he had the off-the-ice stuff, but even that's only allegations right now. That makes me think that there might have been GMs around the league that did their due diligence on that, and maybe they think that it has legs. Maybe. I don't know.
It would make enough sense. Because, like you said, otherwise...
It doesn't... You're right, it doesn't make sense, because how is a guy that's had... He's played 4 years in the NHL. Four whole years in the NHL. Every single one of them, he had over 20 goals. And three of them, he had over 25. So, I don't get it. I don't get why. It's strange how some players in the league seemingly don't have a lot of value, like Evander Kane and Mike Hoffman. Like, guys that can put the puck in the back of the net. That should be what's most important. And San Jose found success with Kane, and they gave up. I mean, it's going to end up being like a late first-round pick, and Danny O'Regan, who's probably not going to be that impactful of a player, if he even makes the NHL. And then Hoffman goes for this. I mean, Florida gets Hoffman for pretty much nothing. For a second-round pick next season, that's a guy you're probably not, if he even became an NHL player, you're probably waiting 5 years from right now. 5 years down the road. Your general manager might not even be in that spot anymore. So it's weird how he had no value. And it kind of makes me think, I wish the Sabres were in a position where they could have done that. Seemingly they couldn't, though. Because they're coming off a player that is similar to that. That might have had some locker room issues. That could put the puck in the back of the net, but maybe wasn't the greatest locker room guy. There's some stuff going on not in the rink. And they just rid themselves of that, and maybe Jason Botchel just said, I don't really want this again. Maybe it's not as bad. Maybe it's not even true. I just don't want to deal with it. He could be saying that, and then it's understandable. But when there's a player out there with that type of goal production that's being had for a future second-round pick, the NHL is the one sport that really, I think, values that kind of stuff. Look in the NFL. I mean, Martavis Bryant got traded at the draft. That dude's been suspended for half of his career. The Browns could trade Josh Gordon right now. I bet you they'd get a first-round pick. That guy's been suspended for more than half of his career.
Well, why don't we go ahead and speculate on the guys that are on the NHL trade market right now? I mean, you've got Phil Kessel, you've got Artemi Panarin, you've got Ryan O'Reilly. And there's going to be a decent chance that one of them, for some reason, doesn't net the package that you were suspecting.
Or you trade with Montreal and you get five times more than you probably should.
Oh, of course, yes. Because because Mark Bergevin gonna Bergevin.
I can't believe they traded Alex Galchenyuk for Max Domi. Max Domi had five goals last year that weren't empty netters.
Think about this. Even furthermore, they traded Alex Galchenyuk, P.K. Subban, and Mikhail Sergachev for a return of Jonathan Drouin, Shea Weber, and Max Domi.
Oh my god, it's so bad. It's almost as bad as what Edmonton did a couple times.
Yep.
Those two teams. They are not going to meet in the Stanley Cup anytime soon.
Thank you, by the way, Edmonton, for just... why couldn't Shirelli have done this badly in Boston?
He was on track to. I think he was on track to. I think that team was ready to go in terms of, like, they were done. I thought their window was closing. And then Sweeney, their GM, comes in, their current GM, and kind of saved the day. He's made some really nice moves there. He's added some depth, like low-key moves. Like,
with some solid
Riley
draft picks.
Nash on your third line kind of moves.
Not to mention solid draft picks as well. I mean, one of the picks that he got for the Dougie Hamilton trade, I think that ended up being Jake DeBrusque.
Foreseeing the decline in Milan Lucic's career, getting a first-round pick for him, that's probably the one I'm thinking of. So, yeah, they've made some good moves. Because I thought they would be done by now. Some interesting quotes from Elliot Friedman. Let's take a break here now, and then we'll get you some of that coming up in the next segment. We'll also hear from The Athletic Edmonton's Jonathan Willis, who was on with Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, earlier today, talking NHL draft, Oilers, Sabres, all of the above, all of the movement around the NHL. It's all coming up next. It's the Nightcap. Jody Biasi and Derek Kramer. 803-0550 for your phone numbers, for your calls. You're listening to WGR. The Nightcap on WGR. Jody Biasi and Derek Kramer. Not a lot of big news coming from Elliot Friedman tonight. He had that, you know, Artemi Panarin thing earlier. He went on Vancouver radio just recently. Couple newsworthy things to pass along. He does think Vancouver's 7th overall pick is still available. So that could be connected to O'Reilly because Vancouver's been one of the teams that has been linked. So maybe the 7th overall pick would have to be in play if you were going to do that with them anyway. And Chicago could be a team to watch. They're interesting too. Missing the playoffs last year, really, really, really bad cap situation. I mean, maybe the worst in the league. Just awful. They've got Brent Seabrook under contract for like 8,000 more years at $10 million or whatever. I don't know.
Well, they did get their cups while they could, so.
They did.
Yep.
Let's get some more insight on the NHL draft, the movement around the league, and a little bit on the Edmonton Oilers. Jonathan Willis joined Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, this afternoon to talk about all of the above. Here is Jonathan's visit with the guys from earlier today.
Glad to have Jonathan Willis back on the show. Last time we talked, Jonathan, or at least you and I did, you were in another job. Now you are the managing editor of The Athletic Edmonton. The Athletic is recently launched in Buffalo. Sounds like this is all working out.
Yeah, I am thrilled. We've had just fantastic response, and working for an outfit that doesn't rely on ads and doesn't rely on stuff gives you some stability. And lets us do interesting things like this draft piece that I just finished. I don't think I've ever worked somewhere that would let me post a 10,000 word draft preview.
Well, one piece, or maybe like the main theme of this piece, is a question that for all the different guests we've had on in the last few weeks to talk about Rasmus Dahlin has been a question I keep thinking about, and that is, what is that going to mean this year? Give me some numbers. So here's Dahlin, a defenseman, going to the league's worst team, but for all that he's described as, what do you see as right to expect?
I would look at Victor Hedman. I think you look at their two draft years, they had very comparable performances at the same level. And, you know, Hedman didn't have that massive franchise turning around impact right away in Tampa Bay because, you know, he's just one guy. But I don't think any Lightning fan would feel shortchanged by what he delivered. And, so maybe keep the offensive expectations to a minimum, but he's going to be a real good player for Buffalo.
And, like, just how soon does that start happening? Like, is that, like, we've been wondering, like, what sort of role we could be realistically expecting to see from Rasmus Dahlin as an 18-year-old playing in the NHL, Jonathan?
I'd say, you know, if you have your expectations set at second pairing defenseman, like right out of the gate, and that might be a little bit conservative, but it's never a bad idea to be a little bit conservative with these guys when they're coming in, because it's a different culture, it's a different language. There's so much adaptation, and everybody handles it a little bit differently. But I'd peg them for that at 18, and you know, within a year, maybe two on the outside, you should have a really solid top pair defenseman.
What do you think, Jonathan, of what else the Sabres should do, or maybe specifically what they should do because of having one Dahlin, essentially? Ristolainen is easy here, and you with the Oilers or around the Oilers, you have had many conversations, even a few with us, about Ristolainen. If you were the Sabres, would you be wanting to scramble like the current roster, specifically even with Risto?
Not necessarily. Like with all these things, it depends on value, right? Because if there's a GM out there who looks at Ristolainen and says, you know, an offensive right shot defenseman, that's a guy I really value, and they overrate him, then you have to consider a trade. And to me, like, I think back to the because I've, you know, based around Edmonton, I think back to the Taylor Hall trade with New Jersey. Edmonton really, really prioritized Adam Larson. I don't think the Devils went into the offseason that year thinking, you know, we got to get rid of Adam Larson. But they got made an offer. And I think Buffalo's at a place where they can do that with Ristolainen too. If somebody, you know, has this outrageous premium that they view him as being worth, yeah, bringing in Dahlin allows Buffalo some options there, but I don't think it pushes them out the door by any stretch.
Right. I'm really curious. I mean, respecting what you said about a point of entry for Dahlin, you know, setting expectations low as a second pair guy, like eventually, though, he certainly will be on a number one pair here, and maybe they still have to find that partner. Maybe he's here. But assuming it's not Ristolainen, then I'm in a different sort of role and see how that goes.
I was wondering if that's where you were going with this, and because I had the same thought. Like, it kind of seemed like as soon as Buffalo won the draft lottery, there was a lot of, oh, well, maybe now they can move Ristolainen out chatter. And, you know, it never made so much sense to me because both because they play, you know, one guy plays left side, one guy plays right side, but also because if you have a guy like Dahlin anchoring your top pairing, what's to stop you from putting Ristolainen on a more sheltered second pair where he doesn't have to worry so much about shutdown work and just letting him run wild against second and third lines of the other team? Like, that to me seems like a place where you might actually see him unlock more offensive potential than we've seen so far.
Yeah, the only thing that would keep me from wanting to do that is if I could trade him for Taylor Hall, you know, or the equivalent. Exactly. Like, obviously, you exactly. want to do that. Yeah, right, if you can. You want to do that.
Who knew that was possible?
Somebody's going to be crazy. Well, yeah, that's just it. Who
knew that was possible before it happened?
Right.
That you could do that way. We're with Jonathan Willis from The Athletic Edmonton. The other, or another Edmonton parallel, I guess, is how Connor McDavid went there, and he was hurt the first year, and they missed the playoffs. The second year, it all goes great. And even with that trade that was generally panned, here are the Oilers into Game 7 of the second round, if I remember right. And then last year, backward. So we know this on a different scale, I would say, with Eichel, Jonathan, but what has happened there with a player that most people believe is the league's very best, and how it hasn't meant automatic winning for the Oilers last year with a step back, and maybe there's even hopefully, because you did have the one good year the year before with Dahlin, there's a parallel perhaps.
Well, you know, all teams have ebbs and flows, right? Like no team performance is a straight line. You're going to have the peaks and the valleys. And I think 2016-17 for Edmonton was a peak where a lot of things went right. You know, they had great health. They had a lot of guys have career years. And then last season, Klefbom was injured and playing all year, but playing hurt and not playing to his potential. Adam Larson had some difficulties, particularly just a tragic personal situation. And Andre Sekera missed up to December. And then when he came back, he wasn't effective. So you do that sort of thing, and then you compound it with some bad moves in the summer, specifically shipping out Jordan Eberle, who is a flawed player, but is also a 25-goal scorer, which is hard to replace. And you can get a pretty big drop in performance pretty quickly. It's just one of those things where no matter what kind of talent you're building around, and both Edmonton and Buffalo have these tremendous young cornerstone pieces, there's still no substitute for building a quality team around them. Nothing's given in the NHL, and just because you win a lottery as a GM doesn't mean you can't build up the supporting cast and that you're not still going to be vulnerable to guys getting hurt or guys having poor performances.
So given where the Oilers finished last year and needing to, I would think, make some changes, are fans there sort of dreading watching Chiarelli do that, given how a couple of these trades recently have worked out for them?
Well, there's definitely, there's another shoe to drop feeling in some segments. I don't know. A lot of the commentary coming sort of from the club and from the insiders has been that Edmonton might take a lower end approach to the summer, maybe making the pick at number 10 instead of trading for the player. And I think that there's an appetite to do that. The interesting wrinkle in all that, of course, is the Milan Lucic rumors, which, who knows what to expect there. But that's the kind of contract where the player is committed at such term and at such money that it's a deal that might be, I don't want to say it's going to be hard to lose, but it's the kind of deal where there's some legitimate hope that the team can kind of get better through it.
What do you think his value is?
It's hard to figure because he's got such a unique skill set. Like, there aren't very many players that play the game like Milan Lucic, and historically, NHL GMs have been willing to overpay for that kind of talent as a result. I think people look at the contract and know that you can't buy him out because of all the signing bonuses, and that makes it difficult. But I think he probably, when you look at the player contract combination, I think he probably has negative value, but I don't think it's absurd negative value. Like, I don't think Edmonton's going to have to trade Kyler Yamamoto or whatever to make it break even. So I'd expect they trade for another guy with a problematic contract.
5 years left at a cap hit of $6 million each, and he's got some power over it, over where he goes.
Yeah.
All right.
That seems like a tough one. There was how long did he go without scoring a 5-on-5 goal last year? It was like months, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he had one goal after Christmas. It was bad.
And when was Christmas last year? Let me think about this. Do the math on this. December. All right. Well, there's a lot to talk about around the league, Jonathan, as maybe usual this time of year. Although, thinking of this, like, we don't have the expansion draft. Just funny to think about, like, a year ago, how exciting the expansion draft was, and then it really didn't turn out to be that exciting. And then, anyway, Vegas went to the finals. But you've got Ottawa's business today. You've got maybe Phil Kessel, Panarin here, O'Reilly. How about all this, Jonathan? What do you expect, maybe one or two things, or just generally here in the coming days?
Ottawa, to me, is definitely the team to watch. I'm curious to see if they keep them. I kind of think they're going to keep the pick this year because it's so hard to – because, of course, they owe a first-rounder to Colorado either this year or next year, and it has to be their first-rounder. Man, that's a tough spot for them to be in. But I think we're going to see lots of things with them. Obviously, they're under pressure to make a deal with Carlson. Lots and lots of players there rumored to potentially be available. So I'd watch them. And then once Ottawa decides what it's doing, I think that's going to have ripple effects throughout. I'd expect we see three or four, fairly significant deals, maybe one or two really high-end ones.
And how does O'Reilly factor into that to you? Do you think that's what do you make his value at? Should the Sabres expect to do pretty well if they choose to trade Ryan O'Reilly?
I'm the wrong guy to ask because I'm a bit of a Ryan O'Reilly fanboy, but I really like the way he plays the game. But the trade that comes to mind instantly to me when I first saw the name on the rumor mill was the Vancouver trade of Ryan Kessler to Anaheim. I think O'Reilly is probably in that range. And as I recall, Vancouver got Nick Bonino and a first-round pick, and I believe there was another element to that package as well. So, if you trade Ryan O'Reilly and you get somebody who can play
second line center as Bonino could at the time of the deal, and you get a first round pick and you get something else. I still don't know that I would make that trade because I'm an O'Reilly guy, but I think they're going to get value. And I mean, centers always have value, right? Like, it's so hard to find those guys.
How about his career, John? Like, he has been, what, 8 years in the league, full seasons. Like, he's almost never out of the lineup. And the numbers are really good. The possession numbers are pretty good. The usage fight here was just so extreme. He was always playing the toughest competition, playing in his own end, and like almost no team success at all. Like, he's the king of the world championships. Like, this guy is a very respectable player, but I mean, even two franchises, maybe going on another. There was an offer sheet along the way too. It's a very interesting career.
Yeah, not many guys. But you know what? I think that's one of those things where, in terms of team success, I think we're going to see it more. Like, the league used to be smaller than it is. The league used to have less parity than it does. I really feel like increasingly we're seeing these stories of guys who are really solid players and do some great things for you. Well, I mean, Taylor Hall in Edmonton's a case in point. And they just haven't had the team success because they haven't been in that situation. So I wouldn't devalue O'Reilly over that, but he's it's certainly a very interesting time.
Yeah. What do you make of the Hoffman? I mean, we already talked about Ottawa a little bit here, but Hoffman being traded twice today, ending up in the division, seems like not what Ottawa set out to do when they traded him to San Jose, to say the very least. So, and, you know, there's been a lot of layers to his departure there with the accusations and the order of protection and all this stuff. But how about just in general, like, where he ends up, and is that a good spot for him, Florida?
Yeah, that I imagine everybody's pretty upbeat in Buffalo right now, what with having the first overall pick. But if they ever feel down, they can just look north to Ottawa and instantly right. Cheer up. That Hoffman deal is a disaster. I don't understand. Well, like, Bodker to me was another guy who had negative value, and San Jose was able to get out from under that contract and then flip Hoffman for a whole bunch of draft picks. You know, there's been a lot of speculation that Ottawa's really just kind of worried about the salary cap floor next year, and I think Dale Talon said that they, you know, he wasn't asked about picks, he was asked mm-hmm. about players when he was talking to them. And that to me is just, it's a silly way to proceed. You can always spend money if you need to spend money, and to get an asset return so comparatively, like, because they got embarrassed, right? Like, they got a poor asset return, and people were kind of like, well, you know, Mike Hoffman, there's all these stories, blah, blah, blah. And then San Jose turns around and gets a much better asset return. That can't happen.
That's right. The Senators, for all the other stuff, they did not need that.
No, it's embarrassing, and it speaks to mismanagement.
Right. All right, well, you know, you're right. It is a pretty exciting time here with this. That lottery win was a huge relief for fans, and maybe there is, like, the relief again in the fan base that something is about to change with this franchise, because it just does not get worse than what last year was around here. You know, like, this town loves hockey, and man, last year was just so not interesting at all, right from the beginning, and frustrating. And, you know, 3 years into Eichel, we're like, we're supposed to be good, and we're on a third or fourth coach. I don't even know. Like, it's got to settle down here, and maybe Darlene is the magic potion.
Yeah, well, it's he's such a special player, and the thing is, like, this could be a crazy exciting draft for the Sabres, especially if they end up, you know, adding another first rounder if and when O'Reilly gets dealt. Like, there's a good chance Buffalo could come away with two cornerstone defensemen out of this draft, because to me, this draft's a lot like 2008 when, you know, you had guys like John Carlson and Eric Carlson picked. And Roman Josi picked late in the first round, into the second round. This is like, the Sabres could come out of this with a blue line of just unparalleled caliber. Well, not unparalleled caliber, but a really high-end blue line behind Jack Eichel. You know, once you have that, those are significant building blocks. It's hard to lose once you have that kind of foundation.
Right on. Jonathan, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, take care.
There's Jonathan Willis from The Athletic in Edmonton. If you missed any of that, you can find it on demand audio at WGR550.com. Last call in the nightcap coming up next, 803-0550 is the phone number. Jody Biasi and Derek Kramer right here on WGR. Jody Biasi and Derek Kramer back here on the Nightcap on WGR Sports Radio 550. Derek, I'm going to get you fired up a little bit here because there's a TO story out there. Did you catch this?
No, I did not.
So apparently, according to TSN, Terrell Owens has been added to the negotiation list for the Edmonton Eskimos of the CFL. Hey, you laugh. The guy ran a 4.43.
Oh yeah,
40,
no, I know.
Like yesterday,
like this is reactionary to that video, and that is why I'm laughing.
I think he could still play.
Oh, I think he could. I just think that it's funny that you know, a team immediately in the CFL was like, mine, give me that.
We'll see. What's interesting is if you remember when he
because
got cut.
Why would he go to Edmonton?
Yeah, when he got cut by, I think it was right after he got cut by the Seahawks. And he had that thing in the indoor football league with the Allen Wranglers. And he got like a little bit of the piece of the ownership and he was going to play there. Like the CFL never called him then, but they're doing
exactly.
It now.
Yeah.
So that's the one interesting part. But, oh, and there's also the story pertaining to T.O. today that the Falcons are not too happy that Julio Jones is buddy-buddy with Owens now. And hanging out with him. I mean, give the guy a break. I know he's a diva, and he's the biggest diva probably the league's ever seen.
Maybe you guys in Atlanta need to just pay Julio Jones the way that he has played.
Right, and I mean...
Just maybe. That's a theory. I'm stretching here. Maybe.
There's one thing you can't say about Owens is that he... Or the one thing you can't criticize him for is the shape he keeps himself in. I mean, he's in his 40s. He's been out of the league for a few years now, and he's still in shape and running a 4.43.
Exactly.
4.43. How old is he? 44? He can't be that old, is he?
He might be a little younger? He might be.
He's 44. I think he could still play. Maybe not in the NFL, but I think he's going to play. I think if he played in the CFL, it'd be pretty good. He last played in the NFL in... When do you think he last played in the NFL? How long do you think it's been?
I think it's been 4 years.
So you're going to say 2014?
Yes. That doesn't sound right, though.
No, it's 2010.
Right, because he just made the Hall of Fame.
Eight years.
Come on, Derek.
No, to be honest, he did make the Hall of Fame 2 years ago. The committee just didn't want to admit it. World Cup schedule tomorrow. Not really any great games. Some good teams. Portugal plays Morocco at 8 a.m., Uruguay versus Saudi Arabia at 11. Iran versus Spain at 2. Blowout, blowout, blowout. That's the way I see those three. So maybe not the most entertaining day of World Cup matchups tomorrow, but it's a good group. It's a good group. Russia is already through. I don't know. I have Russia in this pool I'm in. Am I allowed to root for them? I am, right?
Yes. Why wouldn't you?
It feels like something's off. It's not quite the same. I've also got Japan, and Japan winning this morning. I'm like, yeah, let's go. And like, I feel a little more hesitant to do that with Russia. Aren't we supposed to not like Russia? I watched Rocky IV 100 times. That's what that movie taught me. We're not supposed to root for Russia.
Yeah, I agree.
Although,
I agree with that.
The
but...
fans do turn on Drago at the end. Mm-hmm. So if they can do it, maybe I should be able to do it. See what I mean?
Even Drago?
No. If the Russian fans can root for the American, then me as an American, I can root for Team Russia, especially when, you know, I got a few dollars.
I know, but...
riding on them being good.
I know, but it just feels weird.
It does feel weird, but I think I'm going to keep doing it.
You know...
Let's see how it goes.
Meh.
Speaking of the CFL, Ricky Stanzi, apparently no longer in the CFL. Remember him?
He of the former Iowa quarterback?
Yep, and former Kansas City Chief.
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's end the show with Ricky Stanzi talk. The Nightcap, sure. Jody Biasi, Derek Kramer. We'll be back tomorrow. 3 more days until Rasmus Dahlin becomes a Buffalo Sabre. Tomorrow, Darren Dreger at 9:30. And then Matt Donovan, former, I don't think he played for the Sabres, but he played for the Amerks, former teammate of Rasmus Dahlin. He definitely played for the Islanders, I can tell you that for sure. He'll be on the afternoon show at 4 o'clock, former teammate of Rasmus Dahlin. And we'll be back at 7.
Hey, also go to 11daypowerplay.com. You can donate to
my page, Jody Biasi. You search WGR 550 and you go to Joe DiBiase's page. DiBiase. Don't spell it wrong.
Or Derek Kramer. Stay classy. Derek Kramer.
All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow. It's a nightcap. Jody Biasi, Derek Kramer on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.